resorts and casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Welcome in. It is the Sprinkler Envy edition of Sabres Live. Somebody's got full flow happening.
I got pressure. Full going.
I'm happy for you.
You know what? I struggled through the 95 degree heat that we had, and now it started to rain, and I finally got my sprinkler fixed this morning. It's like, I always say, like, my dad was a general contractor, and every time I had somebody come over to my apartment or house or whatever, I always paid attention. And everybody was always like, why are you hanging around the plumber or the electrician? Because I want to learn. I want to see what's going on. Because later in life, I want to make sure that I'm not being taken advantage of. And when you get quoted for work that is 10 times what you actually pay for the same result, that's why you pay attention. I was like, I don't think I need a full system. And I had a guy come over, fix a couple of things, one head, one solenoid, boom, boom, boom. System is working perfectly.
Did you want to revisit the earlier this summer show where you did tackle plumbing on your own and maybe it took a little longer and maybe it required many trips and maybe would have been worth a few extra dollars spent?
Well, maybe it wouldn't have, but yesterday I was testing the system again, just because every so often I'm like, did I do it right? And I let water run through the whole thing to make sure that it wasn't coming out anywhere, and it was good. So I have that satisfaction weeks after I did the work. Like, I can go back and say, I did this. So that's why you do it.
It's true. I mean, that's literally the whole thing behind the do-it-yourself trend. It wouldn't have continued if people didn't think they could actually do it.
Right? Well, that's why you get like videos on YouTube. I looked at the video on YouTube one time about a garbage disposal, and that person had 600,000 views. I'm like, there's 600,000 people that viewed this video about a garbage disposal.
I hope it was right.
It worked for me, so that was good.
Well, as you can tell, we're in good spirits, full flow into Friday. No Shayna Goldman, though, today, so that's a slight damper on the situation, if you will.
I did talk to her a couple of days ago about goalie stuff and rankings that they're doing through The Athletic, and she was so crazy busy this week because she said next week she's off because it's U.S. Open, the first week of the U.S. Open, and then she, you know, she's big into tennis. So I think we're going to be into September when we next talk to Shayna Goldman, and it's going to be training camp around the corner, rookie tournaments. So I mean, it's going to come fast.
But in her absence, we, of course, have a team of the day, which is Ottawa, and we'll get to them later. But we actually have, based on the fact it's August 22nd and there have been some dry days, on the show and off, there's signings to talk about. And it started yesterday in Chicago, but not with Connor Bedard's extension.
Nope.
It's Frankie Nazar getting himself, with still very few NHL games under his belt, 7 years and basically $6.6 million per. And then this morning, the details finally from Minnesota on the Marco Rossi saga, which comes to an end with a 3-year, $5 million deal on average there. So there's obviously a Sabre angle to pursue when it comes to the Rossi deal, which we will do. But from a league-wide perspective, I think the Frankie Nazar one generates a ton of discussion. And I don't want to steer you in any direction. Like, tell me what you're thinking on the heels of the Hawks and Nazar doing this deal.
So this is the Chicago Blackhawks hoping that they have found a rare pearl, right? And Frankie Nazar, he still has 1 year left on his entry-level deal, so they're going ahead, like, giving him this extension, but he's making less than $1 million next year. Now, Nazar is a good player. He got invited to Team USA's orientation camp. So not only do Chicago think he's a really good player, USA Hockey thinks so, but he is a product of the National Development, NTDP, juniors, University of Michigan. I mean, you look at last year, his numbers in the AHL were great. And then his numbers in the NHL were decent. He was about
At the end, yes.
He was about a half a point a game, mm-hmm. 26 points, 53 games. So if that somehow jumps to playing 82 games next year, and that jumps to 55 points, right? And then you entered the contract, the big deal at $6.6 million, and you're a 60-plus point guy. Then you're Chicago's laughing because 60-plus point, 30 goals, whatnot, they're laughing. This is a great bargain. But as we know, there's always a gamble when you sign somebody with as little as 56 NHL games, because he had played three games when he came out of junior. So 56 NHL games, and you give him the long-term extension. So there's a gamble there, but I think everybody watching the Blackhawks and not just staring at Connor Bedard realize that Frankie Nazar is a really good player. Mm-hmm. It's a significant contract to go, you know, 7 years at 6.6, that's a big roll of the dice.
Is it?
I think so.
For who?
I think so. If it was so easy, it'd be like, okay, let's do that, like, to everybody, that's 6.6. But he hasn't played a full season yet.
Right, but the 6.6 is lower than all the Sabre extensions that we talked glowingly about 3 years ago when Cousins got his and Thompson got his. And, you know, yes, obviously Dahlin's completely different category. It's a defenseman, the stratosphere, the number one overall, whatever. It's different. But the fact that there's a very, very good chance that Frankie Nazar will already be producing before his extension even kicks in,
yeah,
he might be at a level that in today's world, but more importantly, tomorrow's cap world, where he should be slotted at 7 or 8. Now, again, that would be putting the cart way before the horse, but it's also interesting because, you know, we don't have a Luke Hughes deal done yet, and that's been an interesting one to watch just based on the Devils' limited cap right now, but what they'll want to commit to Hughes moving forward. But
when Dylan Cousins signed his deal, Duffer, he had played like 2.5 seasons in the National Hockey League.
I get it.
So Frankie Nazar's played a half a season.
But Frankie Nazar might project now to have more points than Cousins next year.
I agree with you. I agree with you because I don't think, and again, Dylan Cousins at 30 goals and 60 points, it's a slam dunk.
100%.
Cousins at 20 goals and 45 points is a, well, you missed the boat on that. And look, Dylan Cousins before his fight and, you know, when he got punched out by, who was it again?
Garnett.
So Garnett that away. And, you know, like it was a different, he was a different player and those things happen. I who knows what happened to Frankie Nazar next year or the year after, like, we hope he stays healthy for Chicago and produces the same way. But there's always that unexpected event that could happen that changes the course of where the player goes.
Right. But it's just, it's hard to, like, and I don't know whether I, like, go with the wind on these types of conversations. and I hope I'm not contradicting myself show after show or year after year. Like, I think my intentions are similar. My beliefs are similar. And what I'm allowing myself to accept from a team standpoint, when you're committing and the money involved, is that we are in an unprecedented era. And we are going deeper and deeper into that with this cap increase. So I'm less likely to hang on to the natural instinct of like, oh, I don't know about this one. I'm more likely to lean on the side of, I really like this gamble based on the cap going up. And there's a lot of room to work with. And there's not a lot of, there's honestly, I don't see a ton of downside here. Like, look, unfortunately, and we'll talk more Ottawa later because they're the team of the day. And we're going to talk about Dylan Cousins and what his upside is again now with this new group in Ottawa, which he made the playoffs with last year.
Yep.
The thing is, what we just saw with Dylan Cousins is that there's a market. if something falls off with a younger player, teams aren't going to be scared off about the contract and commitment right now. They're going to believe in the young player because there's still so much runway. And if something goes poor for Nazar here in the next couple of years, the Hawks are in a great position to move him, I think. That's all.
Well, they are, but also the thing with the Hawks is if something poor happens that is not as good for Nazar and the Hawks this year, he's still on his entry-level deal. And you can say, oh, he still has seven more years, right? We still are. Now the contract is starting. And if he performs well this year, you're saying, oh, so basically, that $6.6 million over 7 years, I like to do this, and people say, Marty, that's not how it works, but sometimes you got to look. Well, okay, over an eight-year deal, including this year, it's a $5 million, really, contract a year, right? Like, if you take the 7 years of the extension and you add this year, it's a different number. So that's why teams like to do it that way. It's a little different for Connor Bedard, extension, Connor McDavid extension, because you already know the money and where you're going to go.
But we don't with Bedard, do we? Like, what is his next? The fact that they did Nazar's deal first and Bedard is going into his final year of his entry level. What are you thinking Connor Bedard now gets? Because obviously the Hawks are hoping that this is their 1-2 for a long time.
Yeah, so when you're looking at Connor Bedard, I feel like it's going to be 12.
What?
Like, I think, like, it's going to be, well, probably between 10 and 12. Like, you're
really
looking at, oh, yeah.
Wow. I guess I missed the boat on that.
That's where I think it would be, like, between 10 and 12 million, and it depends how this year would turn out. And if he's not signed before camp, it's not that the Hawks don't want to extend him.
Right.
Maybe it's Connor Bedard wants to say, you know what? I want to show you that I can play at the level that I was my first year, at the level that I was in the second half of last year. Because he started slow last year, and then he picked it up. So maybe that's just him saying, I'm a $12 million player. Maybe the Hawks are like, you know what? Right now you're a $10 million player. Mm-hmm. Okay, give me a half a year to prove it to you. And by New Year, New Year's, we're going to sign wherever we think we are. Mm-hmm. But I think he's given himself a half a year to prove it.
So we'll leave that one there for a little bit. And I can't wait for when Shayna rejoins us to, you know, get her take on what some of these, you know, next wave of young players and their contracts mean in this ever-increasing cap moving forward. Let's transition to Minnesota. And Marco Rossi gets a deal. I don't want to say his deal. It feels more like the team's deal. It's Rossi, 3 years, $5 million for the cap hit. What do you think?
It's low, what?
Low dollars.
I mean, if you were going to go 3 years, he had 60 points last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is basically the base for Marco Rossi. He's going to be a 70-point guy maybe this year. So they had $9 million in cap space. They could have given him a 7 or 8 year deal somewhere in the $8 million range, probably $8.5 million range, and say, let's go that way. Mm-hmm. They decided not to do it. They decided to just go for the bridge. And I find it that it's a low number for Rossi because he's worth more than $5 million. Now, I totally understand that Marco Rossi right now is 24 years old. He'll be 24 in September. Mm-hmm. So he signs his 3 year deal. He'll be 27 and can sign an 8 year deal at $10+ million if he continues to perform the way that he's been performing. So I get that for him is like, okay, $5 million a year, 3 years. I have plenty of runway to establish myself as a top player, and then boom, I get the big contract. I think this is interesting for me because, you know, we saw Jack Quinn getting 2 years at 3.3. Mm-hmm. The numbers between him and Marco Rossi are similar. Like, they came from the same place, right? They came from the same place. They were playing together, Ottawa. They got drafted the same year. They're very similar. But Quinn missed some time the last year and a half, and maybe doesn't have the same momentum going into next year as Marco Rossi. Marco Rossi missed the time early with long COVID and then came back and boom, has been more trending up of late.
Quinn was taken eighth overall in 2020. Rossi, with the next selection, went ninth to Minnesota. They have almost identical statistics. Rossi has played seven more games, and Rossi has four more points than Quinn at this point in time. Rossi,
the interesting part, Duffer, I said Rossi would be 27 when he signs his next deal. Actually, he'll be considered a 26-year-old because he doesn't turn until late September, which means he's still an RFA after this deal.
Right.
But 1 year to unrestricted free agency. Mm-hmm. So I think that's why the three-year deal. Because you're like, give me 3 years at five, and then, boom. It's either I play one more year and I'm a UFA, or either, and his qualifying offer will be $6 million. Then he could say, I'm taking a QO, 1 year, $6 million, and then I'm going to hit it big time after that.
So with basically identical career stats and identical draft pedigree, Rossi has 3 years and $5 million ahead of him. Quinn has 2 years, $3.375 for this season and next. How do the Sabres feel about the deal for Quinn after seeing the deal for Rossi?
I think they feel good right now when you look at having Jack Quinn at $3.3 million for a couple of years. But you know that if Jack Quinn performs at the level that we should expect from him, that next year, July 1, the Sabres may be looking at saying, okay, this is a deal now that gets extended, and maybe you got to more focus on the Frankie Nazar deal and saying Nazar is making 6.6. So Quinn, if performing at the level we should expect, will be probably $7+ million after that. Right. And that's where if he performs, if he doesn't, then it's a different thing. But if Quinn goes out, scores 25 to 30 goals or maybe 30 plus and has 65 points, all of a sudden you're like, well, that's going to be more than Frankie Nazar.
It's crazy, right? Frankie's played a third of the games of Jack Quinn, who has not played a lot.
And we're comparing him, yes.
And Frankie Nazar is sitting here with a seven-year extension, 6.6, and he still has time to go on his entry-level deal.
The guys that are left now, Duffer, the RFAs, really the high-end RFAs that are left, Luke Hughes is still, you know, waiting. Mason McTavish still waiting. So those are the two, right? Because now that Marco Rossi is done, Frankie Nazar is done, there's two big RFAs left.
There are. Well, I mean, Frankie wasn't even in the conversation because he wasn't an RFA.
Well, yeah, you're right, because he still has he still had a year. Yeah.
So if you're going to look at it that way, there's still McDavid.
There's a lot of
Eichel.
Yes.
There are a lot of extendables still to come.
Yeah, there is a lot of extendable. We talked about Connor Bedard. He's one of them, so he's not on the list. But there's two. Now that Rossi is done, let's just put it this way. Now that Rossi is done, there's Luke Hughes and Mason McTavish. Those are the two that are probably at the front of the list when you look at RFAs going into this year.
Well, our team of the day is the Ottawa Senators. We've had an awful lot to chew on here with the two significant deals signed in Chicago and Minnesota. From an Ottawa standpoint, how do you view their offseason? And I think for some, the additions were so relatively minor in nature that I think a lot of people perhaps wouldn't even know what Ottawa has done on the heels of getting into the playoffs for the first time in the last 8 years, and they did so with a very strong finishing kick that saw them go 16-5-3 to comfortably get in to the playoffs in the East.
Yeah, 97 points, 91 made the playoffs, so they were, you know, feeling very good at where they were at. Yeah, they didn't make a lot of movement. You think, okay, they lost their backup goaltender, Anton Forsberg. He signs with L.A., but really, Levi Mäkäräinen is the one that came in halfway in the season and gave them that boost they needed and played really well when Forsberg wasn't playing well and Allmark was injured. So Mäkäräinen's going to come in as the backup this year. They lost Adam Gaudette. Okay, a lot of people would say, He's not a big part of the Ottawa Senators. I thought he was a good player.
Yep,
but they you know, they lose him to San Jose. He gets a nice deal over there as a UFA. Mm-hmm. But they are added Jordan Spence on the back end.
Who I like.
I really like. So that was a trade with the LA Kings. They added Lars Eller. That's depth. But they kept their players, right? David Perron, and, you know, they got Claude Giroux re-signed. Like, they really just went with the same group. Mm-hmm. You've got Stützle, which we talked about yesterday as a center, playing with Tkachuk and Fabian Zetterlund, whatever. Mm-hmm. But it's the same group. Drake Batherson, Shane Pinto, who is his last year of his deal, will be an RFA in a year from now. So he could be added to the list of players that could sign an extension. And that will be interesting to see where that goes. But I think that their big move last summer was Linus Ullmark, and it paid off. I mean, they went from 31st in team save percentage a year ago mm-hmm. to 8th last season. Like, that's the big jump. That's a big jump, and Linus Ullmark allowed that to happen. Forsberg and Marlina were good, but their big move was Ullmark a year ago, and it paid off. They got into the playoffs.
Yes, there's no denying that. However, an interesting question does remain, especially with a less experienced backup now in place in Levi Marilainen.
Yep.
Anton Forsberg's been around so long, he's used to, you know, when he's healthy, he's used to the potential workload. Well, that was required, again, from Ottawa's backups last year because, as we yes. saw Ullmark move on from Boston to Ottawa, everyone said, well, how many games is he going to play? Mm-hmm. He never has played a huge, huge amount. And we're still saying that despite him having a dramatic impact on this franchise and getting them to the playoffs.
So the most amount of games he's ever played in a season was 49 when he started 48 games with the Boston Bruins the year that he won the Vezina Trophy.
Mm-hmm.
He had 40 wins in 49 games. Like, that Amazing. Was unreal. But he's never played 50, mm-hmm. let alone 60.
Right.
Right. That's the big difference here. I think if Linus Ullmark was playing 60, 62 games like Vasilevsky, like Shesterkin, like Hellebuck, we'd be talking, and he performed the same way that he's been performing, mm-hmm. we probably would be talking about a top four goalie in the world, mm-hmm. right? And right now we say top 10 because he's still performing at a high level, but he's never played more than 49 games in a year. That is huge. But the impact that he had, even in the little amount of games that he played, was seen with the Ottawa Senators and the way that they played. And they had a new coach. Travis Green came in, and he kind of really established himself. I wasn't sure about Travis Green as a coach, right? I don't know if this is going to work. I felt like Ottawa went, I'm going to say, cheap a little bit. There may have been some more experienced coaches that would have demanded higher salaries that were available. And I felt when they went to Travis Green was, did they just pick a guy that's going to make less money and they're hoping it's going to work out? Travis Green was really good behind the bench, managing the bench, managing his goalies, the injuries. He was really good. So got to give him credit for that.
Linus Ullmark played in 43 games last year. So what's your projection for him this year?
It's got to be 55 plus.
Yeah.
It's got to be 55 plus. I'd like to see him go 55 plus. And I think that if he does that, Ottawa is going to be a hard team to knock out of the playoffs because mm-hmm. he has played at a high level. They were good defensively because their mm-hmm. goaltending was good. Like I said, 8 in team save percentage. Their offense actually dropped from 2 years ago, right? They went from 305 goals per game to 295. It's not a big drop, but it's a little drop. And when you look at their individual performance, mm-hmm. Stützle didn't even have 80 points.
Right.
Tkachuk didn't even have 30 goals. Like, their highest point getter wasn't 80 points or more, and their mm-hmm. highest goals getter wasn't 30. So it was a collective group that was right. able to perform.
Which sounds like a Travis Green team. So yes. he clearly got that, and he got an unbelievable start to the season from Adam Gaudette. And that just kind of set the, you know, wheels in motion that this is going to be a by committee thing. And we'll dive in deeper just on how they're constructed, what their strengths are, forward, defense. We've done the goaltending, but obviously always welcome your input at Sabres Live. It's Ottawa as team of the day. A couple of significant signings in the NHL. Chicago yesterday, Frankie Nazar gets a 7-year extension. And today, Marco Rossi, a 3-year deal with Minnesota at $5 million per. As summer rolls along, the Sabres are joining forces with Topps Friendly Markets to wind down this summer with some fun at Topps locations, including Maple Road in Amherst on the 27th. We'll go Orchard Park Road in West Seneca September 3rd, Elmwood Ave in Buffalo September 10th. On these nights, from 4:30 to 7, spin a prize wheel, fun giveaways, enter to win home opener tickets, signed jerseys, test your skills at the inflatable hockey shot. It's all great stuff with our friends at Topps. Visit sabres.com/tour for all the details. We're back after this. Senators are the team of the day on Sabres Live.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Happy Friday. Back half of Sabres Live here, and Senators are the team of the day. You mentioned that their offense regressed a little bit. I do wonder, like, do you, they were 19th last year in goals for per game, 13th in goals against. So obviously proponents of defensive hockey win because their higher ranking in goals against got them into the playoffs. Mm-hmm. You know where they ranked in shooting percentage at 5-on-5?
I'm going to say they were 12.
Nope.
Well, I kind of went down the middle. So it's either they're very good or very bad.
Very bad. You know that because they didn't score a lot.
Yeah, but so. I thought, like, I didn't think of them as a shooting team. And I just, maybe I should have known. So I don't know if you saw the Bar Down groups did a thing with Matthew Tkachuk, Brady Tkachuk, and Keith Tkachuk because they're on the cover of EA Sport, and they were doing the Mighty Ducks challenge, basically stopping before the cans and shooting a puck on edge. And Brady is about to shoot, and Keith goes, "Maybe they should put an orange sticker on the glass because you always miss the net." So I should have known that their shooting percentage was low, although a missed shot doesn't count for shooting percentage, but that should have been my sign that the Ottawa Senators did not have a good shooting percentage.
They did have a good power play last year at almost 24%. So this, of course, was a 5-on-5 question, which, you know, probably bears repeating here that the Sabres were actually tied with Washington for the best shooting percentage at 5-on-5. Like, these are things to keep in mind when you're like, it's not to say that you should expect a drop off, but you also need to realize that they were among the very best in the NHL in shooting percentage at 5-on. Now, they had to be based on how poor their special teams ended up being, right? Mm-hmm. But the fact that Buffalo was keeping company with Washington at the top of the league in shooting percentage while Ottawa was 30th, only the lowly offensively challenged Calgary Flames and the even worse Nashville Predators ranked below them. So it was a tough, tough season for them to find that success. And you're right. Like, they're not the most gifted, the most dominant offensive team. Like, they don't have this crazy high percentage of high danger chances. They're not swarming at all times. But if you look at their depth and their forwards, let's say they're three lines, do you think they should score more? And should they expect to score more, i.e. get more from Cousins, more from Pinto, more from Ridley Gregg? And can they actually count on David Perron to still be able to get more than 20 goals at this age and where he might slot on the depth chart, which could be as high as a second liner.
It may be as high as a second liner right now. And I do believe they need more out of David Perron. They need more out. Like, Dylan Cousins went there, and everybody in Ottawa was like, oh my gosh, look, hey, look at the performance. He had an assist here. And then it dried up, right? It was a boost early on, and then it just slowed down. Mm-hmm. And I think that is something that cannot happen for Cousins and the Ottawa Senators to have success. You can't go Kachuk, Stützle, and then boom, Cousins, like, it's not going. David Perron, it's not going. What's Drake Batherson going to do if he's playing on that line, or Claude Giroux? Or you didn't have a 30-goal scorer last year. You mm-hmm. didn't have an 80-points guy. You can have success that way. They proved it. But you're going to rely on your middle six a ton. And right now, I've got my reservations when it comes to the middle six being able to perform. Because Perron's getting older, Giroux's getting older. Like, that's a big difference.
Right, but they have youth. I mean, obviously Cousins fits the youth profile still with 5 years remaining on his deal. Zetterlund comes in. He's averaged 20 goals a year the last 2 years. He's only 25. They obviously like him enough to give him the deal at over $4 million that he got. So I think youth is still very much on this team's side. And the fact that they had the strong finishing kick, I can't even remember what you said with Montreal, because whether they would make the playoffs next year, did you say yes or no? So what about Ottawa?
I think Ottawa, yes.
Really?
I know what it comes down to. Allmark, and I like their defense, and they have youth on defense. Jake Sanderson's fantastic. Thomas Chabot is still, to me, a really, really solid player on the blue line. More offensively minded, but Artem Zub is good. Now they've got Jordan Spence.
They like Tyler Cleven, too. So
Tyler Cleven, they like. And the other one is Jensen. So they've got a group on the back end that I think is really solid. They've got a really good goaltender, maybe even a good tandem mm-hmm. if Levi Mäkinen continued to play the way that he did when he was up. And it comes down to that to me. Again, the Ottawa Senators 2 years ago, it was, can they get saves? Because if they can get saves, they'll be fine. Mm-hmm. They did last year. 31st in save percentage all the way up to 8. The Sabres were 31st in save percentage this last season. I'm not asking them to get to 8, but the Ottawa Senators are kind of proving the point here.
Yeah.
You're getting saves. All of a sudden, remember how often Brady Tkachuk was angry and mad and slamming his stick and going back to the bench pouty and after a goal that they'd given mm-hmm. up? Like, yeah, you're not getting saves. You're going to be like that. All of a sudden, it was different last year. Brady Tkachuk's a great leader, and you know he's positive. And but yeah, because it's easier to play when you don't give up 4 goals a game. That's mm-hmm. that's the basic. That's the bottom line.
Yeah, it's funny. You like my
Brady Tkachuk pouting and slamming his stick, and because that's all it was. They had an ISO camera on him going back to the bench, and it would be like he was so moody. It changed a little last year.
Yeah. Well, you know, yesterday we went down that path because of the ongoing debate. Is Tage Thompson a center or a winger? And we knew this Ottawa discussion was coming, and we talked a lot about just how interchangeable on the dot, the faceoff dot, you know, Stützle and Tkachuk are. I dove in a little deeper. Like, so Stützle as a number one center just simply does not take a lot of faceoffs. On his team, Giroux, Pinto, Norris all took more draws last year. But what I found even more fascinating was on power plays, Tim Stützle took 10 faceoffs last year.
Yeah.
Brady Tkachuk, winger, took 140. Mm-hmm. And that's why when we were having the kind of like those are the moments where I constantly see Brady Tkachuk in the middle, right? Every time you're in that high-pressure power play situation, you're almost always seeing Brady Tkachuk or Claude Giroux take the draw. And even Claude's not, you know, like, he's more a winger right now.
He is a winger. Like, he's...
But Marty, playing, he took 128 power play faceoffs last year. He took 204 shorthanded faceoffs. Claude Giroux was counted on as a faceoff guy, even though he's not, like, their number one center.
But what's Tim Stützle's best asset? He's got a good shot.
Of course.
He's got a great shot. So you're not going to put him in a face-off dot.
Exactly.
You're
going
to put him in a position to shoot.
Exactly.
So you're like, hey, it's like Tage Thompson on the power play. Would you want him to take the draw?
No.
And then you got to wait for everybody to be set up? No. You're like, hey, let's put him off to the side and we're not going to wait for the penalty killers to be ready. We're going to win a draw and get it to you right away. Stützle is the same way. So it's weird because it doesn't make sense. You have a center and he's taken 10 power plays, power play draws, but you look at their setup and you're like, okay, that works because he's got to shoot, right? Mm-hmm. So he's got to get himself open for a shot.
But maybe
not that Ovechkin would take faceoffs, but there's players that you're like, you're the shooter. We put you in that position.
And guess what? We talked a lot about Sidney Crosby the last 2 days. Sid will take the faceoff on the power play and it'll be on the doorstep and back door before you know it, and it's in the back of the net. So it doesn't really matter.
But he's technically not the shooter, so it's got to go through a shooter,
right,
like a Malkin that's open for the one-timer and finding Sidney somewhere else.
Yeah. Well, I did, and I don't, you know, these are better served, obviously, for the local reporters and broadcasters in Ottawa to evaluate, but you see enough of them, and like when you think of Stützle, I mean, his point production has been phenomenal, and his contract well earned. Do you see him like still evolving as an all round center? And I say this again, this minor footnote of faceoffs that we just kind of stumbled on here the last two, and it's not a result. Clearly, we haven't even been talking about the results of these draws. We're just talking about it from a structure and positioning standpoint. Like, Stützle doesn't take a lot of defensive zone draws.
Yeah.
So, and again, that's not unusual. You have players that you count on in those situations, but at the same time, would you expect in a few more years that Stützle would be this all situations, all zones, has to be out there kind of guy? Or do you think the addition of Dylan Cousins changes this, that they hope that Cousins is more of that type of player? And I don't even know what you think of Shane Pinto's upside and what you think he's going to become in all of this Ottawa.
I think Tim Stützle is more of a one-dimension type of player. I don't see him turning into an overall kind of first line center that's going to check the top lines. Like, I think if you're Ottawa, you have Stützle, you have to say, okay, we're not going top line against top line. We have to find a different matchup because we have to think of Cousins probably playing against the top line or even Claude Giroux. Last year in the Selke voting, Claude Giroux finished 25th in Selke voting. Behind like Joel Eriksson-Ek and Pierre-Luc Dubois and Alexis Protas and Robert Thomas, like people are thinking Giroux is the defensive guy with Ottawa that can move up and down the lineup and play middle or wing.
Mm-hmm.
Stützle is not that guy. Pinto could be a good option if you were thinking an upgrade. Like Montreal has this guy, Jake Evans. Evans is a third, fourth liner.
But he got rewarded,
He got rewarded with a nice contract. Mm-hmm. But Pinto has more upside offensively, I think, than Jake Evans.
Of course, yeah.
But could be that same type of guy where you're down in the lineup, but you're thought of being a top guy. Philippe Deneau. Philippe Deneau is the little same thing. Like, Deneau is not top two centers in LA. It's Kopitar, it's Byfield. But if you ask around the league, who's a defensive center that should be a top six but doesn't play there, Deneau is one of them. Yeah. Evans is one of them. And Pinto could probably be that same type. It's not Stützle.
So what's your outlook for Dylan Cousins now?
I'd like for Dylan Cousins, I would want him to be a 25 goals, 35 assists, 60 point. I think that would be a good standard for him to try to get to. I'm a little bit concerned that will not be. Because you're looking at last year, Cousins was 16 points in 21 games, but 5 goals. If you were to prorate his 5 goals in 21 games over 82, that's not even 20.
It's basically 20, though.
Yeah, but I mean, is 20 enough for Dylan Cousins?
Right. No. It's a very fair question.
It's not enough. No. 25 to 30 is enough. 20 is not enough. Yeah, I mean, if he got 24, I'd say, okay, that's good. But 19, 20 is not enough for Dylan Cousins. He's plays the top power play. Mm-hmm. He plays top 6 minutes. It's got to be more. So it's got to be 25 to 30 goals. It's got to be 65 points. Like, that's the standard that he has to be able to find.
Is there a breakout player in Ottawa that we should expect something, something for? I mean, again,
Who I'm interested in finding out this year, and he signed a two-way deal, and maybe he starts as lower in the lineup, but he could elevate and play in the place of a David Perron if Perron doesn't work or whatever. Would be Arthur Kaliev.
Oh my gosh. I told you last year he wasn't going to make the Kings, and that was pretty accurate. And then he didn't latch on with the Rangers.
On with the Rangers, and he was put on waivers and everything. But
yeah,
I feel like I want to keep my eyes on him.
Well, it's worth the risk for sure. I mean,
a two-way deal to be your 13th forward.
Yeah,
he's got skills.
100% for his sake. I mean, in his best moments, which were short-lived. He was very good with LA, and then it all, kind of came crashing down. But yeah, the Senators have that extra bit of depth everywhere. And of course, they have the experience now of getting in and not necessarily doing it the hard way. I mean, they had some hot streaks last year where people were talking about them, and then it kept going the wrong way, and it didn't turn until March. And that's when they had that 16-5-3 finish to get them into the playoffs.
Quickly, because I wanted to verify the information, but you know who was Arthur Kaliev's GM when he played juniors with the Hamilton Bulldogs?
Probably Steos.
Steve Steos was his GM. So that's why he went and got him. And maybe there's a reignition of the flame that lived in Arthur Kaliev in 3 years with the Hamilton Bulldogs.
Well, belief is a powerful thing. And sometimes you just needed that added reinforcement of somebody saying, hey, I believe in you. So we'll keep an eye on Kaliev for sure with Ottawa. We will remind you again, feel like I haven't done this enough lately. Enter to win a key to the arena, including Sabres and Bandits season ticket memberships for the 25-26 season and pairs of tickets to 5 upcoming KeyBank Center live events. You can enter to win this one-of-a-kind prize at sabres.com/key. Birthdays and more to close out another week on Sabres Live right after this.
Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Another big weekend for shows. Kids Bop at Darien tonight. And once you navigate your way through that, you're going to want to end up at Town Ballroom tomorrow night for the Pink Pony Club Chapel Roan tribute with our own Addison Logan opening up. It's going to be an amazing night. So we'll see you at the ballroom tomorrow.
She's been busy. She was at Jack Rabbit last night and
outstanding
Grand Island tonight. And
Lancaster
so she Porch has been
Fest
busy.
Recently. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's great. That's what summer's about. Get out there and, put a smile on people's faces. And that's perfect.
This or that, Dua Lipa or James Corden? Both have birthdays today.
I don't know. I'm going to say Dua Lipa.
All right. I'll give you 3 more to choose from. Dean Evison. Yeah. Brock Faber, Braden Schenn.
Brock Faber.
Yeah, went with the young blood. He's 23.
Although I do, Dean Evison is growing on me. I was always he's so crabby and he's always angry. He's always like wanting to kill something. And now I'm like, I kind of like him. And maybe that's because I like those type of coaches, right? Yeah. I had Torts, I had Lindy, whatever, fiery. Mm-hmm. I think I would like that. And I think he's done a fantastic job. So I'm starting to really have a soft spot for Dean Evison.
Dean is 61, Brock Faber's 23, Braden Schenn, 34, and still a big part of the St. Louis Blues moving
Although we
forward.
Did see the Schenn, Papa Schenn, Dad Schenn at the... father or mentor's trip when St. Louis came into town.
Yes.
So, and it was funny because I believe he did 2 that year because of the 2 Schenn brothers. So he had 2 trips.
There's been a lot of movement in the Shen family, but it's not been Braden. He's got the Missouri roots. Have a great weekend, folks. We'll see you Monday.